Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
The world is changing faster than ever, and you need a website to go with it. Whether you're a seasoned pro looking to build your following or just starting out with a brand new idea, you need a landing page that's bold, innovative, and uniquely yours.
Whatever your passion, you need a web designer with experience, panache, and heart. We can't help you with any of that. Hi, I'm Lou Bank.
And I'm Greg Benson. Are we Silicon Valley tech visionaries? No, we're podcast hosts, and that's basically the same thing. And we're here to tell you about Ancestral Agave Syrup.
Ancestral Agave Syrup is the 100% pure nectar of the agave plant. Now, wait a minute, you're thinking. I've had 100% pure agave nectar. Well, not like this, you haven't.
That stuff is processed with a diffuser, which introduces acid. Plus, it comes from Blue Weber, a monoculture that dominates farms, depletes the soil, and won't help you grow your brand or expand your e-commerce functionality.
Ancestral agave syrup, on the other hand, is made by slowly cooking down the pure agua miel from Salmiana agaves in Hidalgo and Tlaxcala, two states that have been harvesting those plants for generations. It also won't expand your e-commerce functionality, but it will grow your brand if your brand is person who makes kick-ass margaritas, or pecan pies, or pancakes.
Unfortunately, the families behind this tasty stuff are being offered big beer company bucks to rip out their agave and plant barley instead, which would be a crime, because Ancestral Agave Syrup is about as far from the processed stuff as 100% pure Vermont maple syrup is from that sticky bottle at a diner.
So, don't build a homepage from one of several easy-to-use templates, but do grab Ancestral Agave Syrup today. Our first 25 customers will also receive a special limited edition agave superhero comic book. So do not wait. Protect the land, make better drinks, and save the bats by grabbing some today.
Wait, what was that about bats?
Yeah, it's an important food source on the migration path of the Mexican long-nosed bat.
Huh.
Yeah, the flowering stalks of the agave also provide protection from predators.
Oh, well, that's cool. Should we get back to the ad now?
Yeah, let's do that. Go to ancestralagave.com or click the link in the show notes to grab some today.
Ancestral Agave Syrup. It won't help you build a beautiful website, but it will make your cocktails taste really, really good.
I'm Lou Bank.
This is Aaron Campos with Dark Matter Coffee.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Green Gex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico whenever I am blessed with the presence of Aaron, also coffee.
Oh!
Wow. Oh, you get all kitten-like. So Aaron, one of the things that I think a lot about, so you're at Dark Matter, right? And you guys, like, a lot of the people who own Dark Matter and run Dark Matter are of Mexican descent.
Yeah, I mean, in the case of, how we're sourcing coffee, me and Jesse have been, on the forefront of really sourcing coffee for the longest time. We have, Kelly, who's been doing a lot of that recently, but one of our, biggest, and most important things in our brains is sourcing coffee from the right people and knowing our suppliers. So it's been a really big thing. And me and Jesse being Mexican-American, it's a really big deal to us. And it does also affect how we want to do business. Central America, South America, and Mexico have been really important to us because they are our neighbors. So that's really helped kind of shape how we see the future of sourcing coffee for dark matter.
Right on. And you source direct and you pay really good money. You guys have been doing this. Dark Matter's been in business for, what is it, 13, 14?
16 years.
That's right. Sweet 16. I was just at the party. I should know that. Shows you how much I pay attention. So for 16 years, and for 16 years, you've been trying to bring in a coffee from Mexico, right? Right now, you primarily are sourcing your beans from Guatemala and
El Salvador.
And El Salvador.
Yeah. So Guatemala and El Salvador are our longest relationships. And with those, they were really organic. Even from Federico, who's our oldest in El Salvador. We are, oh my God, 14 years now, something like that.
Okay. So most of your existence.
Yes. You know, he's taught us a lot about, you know, the fundamentals of, you know, how coffee is grown, especially in El Salvador, and, you know, the general climate of that country. And, you know, I think a lot of the roots of where we started to, you know, build our perspective on things really started from traveling in that country, specifically because, you know, when we were roasting prior to traveling, we were really relying on a lot of information that was coming from importers, coming mm-hmm. from online,
right.
Coming out from outdated books. And, you know, we were just starting to realize we need to start to ask these questions and go and find answers on our own versus relying on information that's given to us.
We first, don't firsthand information,
exactly.
Not second, third, fourth. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's surprising, you know, while, you know, you have people that preach a lot of transparency, you know, you really never get that full effect until you see it for yourself. And, you know, at that time, Dark Matter wasn't even a thing. We were just Star Lounge. That was, you know, we were just starting the roasting company. We were paying out of pocket to go to these things. They meant a lot to us. So we met Federico because we were working with a larger cooperative in El Salvador. And, you know, Jay had hit him up, or Jesse for everyone else, hit him up via Twitter. And he invited us with open arms to go see the Beneficio and see his farms. And so ever since then, we've had such a wonderful relationship with him. And as far as Guatemala goes, I remember that day so clearly. It was blizzarding outside. You know, we are really, really adamant about making sure that we're shoveling our sidewalks for customers. But it's one of those days where you shovel, you know, and in 5 minutes, it's already covered again. So Jay is now outside shoveling, you know, we're both kind of like in grumpy moods. We're like, what's going on here? I'm inside. I'm still making drinks.
I feel exactly where this is headed. And then
we have this car, you know, it's like a black Escalade that rolls up. And then all of these people file into the cafe. It's at the mothership right below our feet right now. And, you know, I start helping them. Jay runs in to help as well. And, you know, they buy their drinks, hang out with us, taste everything, and then they introduce themselves, which is really classy, by the way. I really liked how they did that. When they told us, hey, we have a farm in Guatemala. We would love for you guys to come. We actually heard about you because they were touring a cheese facility in Wisconsin, and one of the cheese producers there had such a great time at Star Lounge that he told us you got to go to Dark Matter, which I always use that as an example of really great customer service. You never know who you're going to meet.
Yeah.
And I don't know who that barista was, but they gave this cheese producer such an amazing time. It connected us to a long-term relationship in Guatemala. I mean, it's...
That's lovely.
Yeah. I mean, that's being kind really is a really powerful thing. We happened to be going to Guatemala the following week, and we were exploring coffees in the same region, which they're in the Lake Atitlan region mm-hmm. in Guatemala. And we're like, why not? Let's go.
That's a beautiful coincidence.
I know. Really, really big coincidence. So we met up with them. We found out they're also cheese producers, hence the, you know, cheese exploratory mission in Wisconsin. And we just fell in love with their mindset, their ability to think on their feet and pivot on experiments, and a lot of like-minded individuals. You know, that's where we learned how to do different fermentation experiments, which we'll talk about later. But, you know, they have been amazing. So all the while that we have been developing these amazing relationships with the Bersanis and with the Pacas family, we have been trying very, very hard to maintain and or create relationships in Mexico
for coffee. Because you certainly have deep relationships with the cacao now, right?
Yes, which I love that. I love, you know, we've been searching so hard and putting so much energy and the coffee side. Of course, organic relationships create all of these things on the cocoa side. So that's been really beautiful for us. You know, and we've had a couple different iterations of relationships in Mexico, and unfortunately, they all ended, very strange ways. And it's so I guess what I mean by that, you know, we've had a situation where, you know, once something that's really important to us is being able to create, sustain, and have a like-minded individuals mm-hmm. in the same industry and be able to grow together, to be able to have the discussion about pricing and quality, and, you know, have a couple mezcals together, you know, talk about what the future holds, have a lot of, you know, have a lot of transparency and both sides of things.
Sure.
And don't get me wrong, we've seen a lot of people like that, but, you know, when we are learning about specific places, you know, sometimes we'll get into situations where, like Veracruz, for instance, we had a really amazing, coffee experience there, really good coffees. And, you know, we set up, we made the contracts, we made the deals, everyone felt great about each other. We were super excited about this whole thing. And, you know, contracts don't mean very much. They're pieces of paper that we just signed.
Sure.
You know, at that point, sure. You know, I'm not going to send a lawyer to the middle, you know,
right.
Whatever.
Right.
And we got outbid at the very last moment, right when they were building that container. And they were like, well, we're going to send it to someone else.
Ooh.
But there wasn't even a conversation about it. So you're like, okay, well, really nice talking to you guys. And, you know, so that one hurt a little bit, but, you know, we understand. We also understand the climate of Mexico, and especially with coffee producers. Sometimes, there's been a lot of operating off of this short-sighted situation where I'm going to make the most money I can out of this harvest because...
Right, because I need to.
Because I need to.
Yeah.
And, you know, the coffee market's extremely volatile. I don't know these guys. Yeah, we had a great time with them, but I don't know these guys. So it's not that I think there comes a great deal of understanding and empathy for a lot of these decisions that were made as well. You know, another situation was El Edén. So El Edén was in Guerrero, Mexico. And this one was actually kind of a heartbreaking one. We were working with them through a friend of ours who owned a importing operation called Tiger Orchid. We worked with him with a 15-member cooperative. So usually with cooperatives, you see them much bigger than 15 members. But these 15 members were all part of this small town, and they were all run by families. And this is the first time in a long period of time that they were starting to really hone in on and produce a legal export. So before that, they were in a climate perfect for poppy producing. So, and they were making, you know, and they were making money off of that.
Off of and we'll just stop there in terms of poppy.
Yes.
Okay.
So, and as far as that goes, they all switched to coffee and started working on that. And they were doing naturals, which naturals, when we look at, in broad strokes, I always think of, wash coffees. I feel like you're bringing out inherent qualities of the bean itself. When you're looking at honeys, that's also in big, broad strokes. You're going to get a lot of body and a lot of sweetness in the end cup.
You're saying honeys, that's a kind of coffee?
So washed honeys and naturals are kind of like these kind of catch-all terms for the main pillars of processing coffee. And there are ways to manipulate the coffee after it's harvested to bring out different flavors. So I'd say most of the time with specialty coffee, you're going to be looking at washed coffees as the primary source. But honeys are incredible for, you know, if you get a young coffee, for instance. We've seen producers that when you get a harvest off of a young tree, the acidity might be a little wilder and might taste a little greener. You know, there might be some slight, you know, defects in acidity, or I wouldn't even want to say defects, but just, you know, some wildness there. And when you do a honey process, what you're essentially doing is you are removing the skin of the cherry, and you're exposing it to the sun, to the air. And
the it being the coffee bean.
The coffee bean and this gelatinous layer of mucilage.
Oh, it's literally just the skin on the outside of the cherry.
Yeah.
So you still have, the fruit.
Yes, exactly. So what happens is, you know, with, you know, in terms of what you need for fermentation is you need air, you need moisture, you need sugar. And those things are important.
Yeast helps.
Yeast helps, but that's going to be in the air.
It's in the air.
So, you know, as with that, you don't really carry that process too far because the skin's gone. The skin protects the moisture and keeps it in. So once you remove that, it's exposed to air and the sun directly. In some cases, indirectly, but these are stylistic things for black honeys and all. We'll get, different podcast.
There you go.
And what you're left with is this sugary, you know, residual kind of, almost looks like Cracker Jacks when you're done with them. And it absolutely translates in the final cup of coffee in the sense of like getting more body and getting more sweetness. And then you have naturals. Naturals, which in process are... someone is a simple idea, but one of the most difficult things to do well, where you are taking cherries that are freshly harvested and you're laying those cherries out and you're letting them dry. So where honeys, you had the skin was removed. Now you have these cherries with their skin intact.
So skin in the game.
There you go. I could always depend on you for that, Lou.
Yeah.
So now that you have skins, it's going to, the skins that, or the cherries that didn't have ruptured skin are going to have this enzymatic reaction with all that sugar and the flesh inside the cherry. So I do this experiment with, you know, people that we bring to coffee growing regions. You'll take it, something that's on the raised beds that's drying the naturals out, and you rip open one of those cherries that I just described, and it just... floral and light and just so amazing and just really soft fruit kind of characteristics. And then you take a cherry that was ruptured through the process because they're not all going to be perfect.
Yeah.
Well, now it's going to be a long time drying them. You're exposing that juicy sugary mucilage to the air, and now you're getting lactobacillus. You're getting a whole bunch of different wild yeasts. You're getting all these things that are now creating acetic acid. So you might get a way sharper, almost vinegary kind of like kick to it.
Sure. Well, yeah, acetic acid literally is vinegar. Or literally is acetic acid, I guess is the right way to say that. But yeah.
And a little bit of that isn't bad. I mean, you know, if you get a little bit of that in the natural, like it just adds another beautiful, awesome layer. It's something that we love. Yeah. And I think there's those imperfections really create a lot of beauty to the end product. And Ellie Den, going back to that, was doing that, which we haven't seen a lot of people really only focusing on naturals in terms of coffee growing, you know, producers, much less a community or a cooperative. Really exciting stuff. We loved it. I mean, it was blueberry forward. I mean, it tasted just really, really bright, really fruity. And we fell in love with that coffee. And we had a situation where, you know, okay, everyone signs their names on every bag that we bring back, you know. And at that time, we're much smaller. We're probably buying about 60 bags at a time. And so we would separate every farmer. We'd put them all on a spreadsheet. We would have our quality control department do reporting based off of who was signing what bag and returning all this data back to them just so they can see it. I mean, it was something we wanted them to see from our end so they can be educated about the product. And, you know, it was a really, really amazing relationship that we had with them. But, you know, being that they're so isolated, there's been a lot of issues with sourcing it, and there was a lot of issues with getting it consistently, in the sense that sometimes the infrastructure was completely derailed based off of a mudslide. They have one road up and down.
Ugh.
So they were completely unable to get anything down or up. And, you know, it was a community that was there in the mountains. And eventually production on that coffee really ceased to the point where we just weren't able to source it anymore. And, you know, it would be a really interesting you know, idea to try to find out, you know, where they're at this point, you know.
Go revisit them.
Yeah, go revisit, see what's going on. No, this is Guerrero.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very difficult state to source from.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I would, you know, reconnecting with them would be an amazing thing, you know. And, you know, I think that for us and our palates and what we like to see in coffees, and having like a really broad flavor spectrum for our portfolio, that was amazing. And we loved the story and we loved working with them. So, you know, and so it's just, it's been, you know, fairly difficult. But, you know, I think it's one thing that we really don't want to give up on, and we want to continue to work with. You know, now that we're doing a lot of cocoa sourcing, it's really inspired us to, you know, now we have, now that we know you, first of all, going to Mexico regularly has been much easier for us, and there's been much more of a focus on it in recent years.
I just want to put a fine point on this. Are you saying that this old white guy gets you down to Mexico more frequently?
It's our secret.
Okay. Okay, it can be our secret. No, that's fair.
We go to Mexico all the time.
You do. You don't need me for that. Huh. So, okay, so it's more likely that we're going to start seeing some more Mexican coffees out of you.
Absolutely. We're actually sourcing one right now off of a trip that we went on. You know, we just started this, and it's with Mahamut. And
Mahamut is the name of the cooperative, or the name of the town?
Yes. So working with them in Chiapas has been really amazing. Actually, we went there with, with you, and, we went there with Rick Bayless' team. So it's been really, really fun to do that together. We're sourcing that specifically to, you know, we're going to use it for some, of our, projects as well. But, it was kind of our, really beautiful union of, you know, working with the Frontera group to source a coffee together and work on it. I mean, that cooperative is actually kind of amazing. It's a big cooperative, but they're only working with small producers that have, you know, 2 hectares of land. You know, anything bigger than that, you know, they would rather just focus on those people who don't really have a lot of access to infrastructure or sourcing. So they're able to rely on this cooperative that is making compost, giving education to the farmers to increase the quality of the coffees. And, you know, it's been, it was really amazing to see what they were doing. Granted, it's not a perfect cup, but, you know, I think that, again, there's beauty in a lot of, you know, the imperfections of a lot of these things. So knowing that it's a dynamic, you know, ever-evolving, always changing thing, even from batch to batch. I mean, Lou, the idea of consistency in coffee is
right.
Such, you know, it doesn't exist. The only way you can get really true consistency is if you burn it all equally.
Or if you've got Folgers in your cup.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah.
So that's really the only way you can get it. Other than that, I think kind of enjoying that ride and seeing how coffees are evolving, whether it's going to be this perfect cup of coffee that you're buying, you know, at a really, really high premium, versus a smaller cup, they're all going to change. So,
God, that's beautiful. You know, so that gets me thinking about it, and we're going to wrap this episode, because now you've got me thinking about another episode we need to do where we talk about the different varieties of coffee beans and how they change, not just, you know, from one variety to the next, but from one harvest to the next, which is so reflective of what I love about agave as well.
I'm in.
Okay. Well, let's wrap this one and start the next one.
All right. Thank you so much, Lou.
Right back at you, Aaron Astapronto.
You've been listening to Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. We're blessed with sound engineering by Roy Sierra and a theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Marco Ricos. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, well, I'm sure you'll let us know that too. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Agave Road Trip. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc. Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization using the power of educational storytelling about food to build a more equitable, resilient food system. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends. And please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network might lead you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If you drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Drive responsibly. Eat responsibly, too. And listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive. Do not walk either. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to stretch every 30 minutes. If you stretch every 30 minutes, please stay within your defined stressing capacity. And consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you don't have a doctor, maybe Dr. Ryan Acock, the Cocktail MD, can help you out. Thanks for listening.
Agave Road Trip out.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.